Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Roll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Jumping James Herbert, let's jump into the conference finals.
Woo!
That's some excitement.
Super excited.
I feel...
Final Four.
It is the Final Four. Are we legally allowed to... Oh, yeah, we don't own the Final Four, but we have a partnership through CBS, so we can't get
in
trouble
for saying... We're affiliated with the NCAA Final Four.
We're broadcasting that stuff.
Yeah.
So I feel like we're not going to get in trouble for saying the Final
Four. Will this be better than the NCAA Final Four?
Yeah, because it's pro basketball.
The players are better.
Now I can't.
Coaches are better.
Yeah, I can't say that the presentation is going to be better because I feel like the presentation of the Final Four, the Masters, and every third Super Bowl is magical.
Yes. Such a company man.
Yeah. Also, watch Two Broke Girls, one of the best comedies on television. But
what channel is that on?
It's on CBS.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good to know.
Yeah, it's we've got four teams left. We're down to four. I'd say they're pretty good.
The top two seeds, right?
The top two seeds are have been decided. We got the Eastern Conference Finals.
But what does it really mean that Houston is the second seed? Like, that was just a whole big mess from 2 to 6 in that conference. I don't know that that really means anything.
Yeah, I mean it probably doesn't.
Like, wouldn't. If it wasn't, like, the Clippers, they would have had home court if not for the division thing in that series anyway, right?
I think so. I think that's how it worked out.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, right, because division winner automatically got the higher seed.
Yeah.
Which is just, we got to get rid of divisions. I know I've said that a bunch on this podcast, but we just got to. It's so stupid. It's so stupid. No one's buying a Pacific Division Championship t-shirt anyway.
Absolutely not.
I'll just repeat myself one more time. It's embarrassing to have a single division banner hanging from your rafters.
Yeah.
You're a loser culture if that's what you have.
Raptors have a couple of them up there.
Yeah, Timberwolves have them, the Kings have them. I'm sure lots of arenas have them, but that's not how you run a basketball team.
The Raptors did a whole elaborate ceremony, not this year but last year. When they won it this year, it was more like they put the banner up, but they didn't do a whole thing.
It was
thing.
Just like there, and they're like, oh, yeah, look up there. We put the banner up there.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. It was just there before the game, and I was on press row just like, wait, what?
They're just dropping like those parachute prizes from near the banner just to like get people to look up without actually having to announce it so that they can notice it.
Subtlety.
Yeah, the subtlety. Well, Friday we had the Hawks defeat the Wizards in Game 6. To win that series.
That happened.
We had the Warriors defeat the Grizzlies in Game 6.
We haven't talked about this stuff. It feels like forever ago.
It does feel like a long time ago.
Paul Pierce's fingertip decided yet another Eastern Conference series.
Oh, man. That was a really incredible moment.
Yeah, that was nuts. And I kind of, like, when it happened, I was like, I hope it counts. And which is weird because, like, I wanted the Hawks to win the series. The reason why I wanted the Hawks to win the series, I just think they're the better team and they'll give us a better conference finals and potentially a better finals if they make it there. But, like, the Wizards had played better, and I just was like, let's do an overtime. Like, let's see if they can steal another win here. But, you know, they showed the replay and it was obvious. It was close. Like, it was only like a tenth of a second or whatever. But you could just see Pierce's face was kind of heartbreaking when he was watching the replay because everybody knew.
Yeah, everyone knew. And it was though, like, I wanted it to count too because I'm kind of with you. I think I wanted the Hawks in the conference finals because I think it'll be a better series. Yeah. I also want John Wall to just get some rest with those fractures. I was so nervous every time he did anything.
Yeah,
even like left-handed passes, I was like, I don't flick that wrist too hard. Let's
that
keep it
steal
under
that he got. Was it in that last game, was it the game before, where he had that, he swiped down with his left hand on the ball.
I think that was Game 6.
To get a steal late in the game. And it was just like, oh, wow. Sure. That must have hurt like hell.
Yeah. I don't want to not watch him anymore, but I like this Hawks team, and I like the way, I don't know, when they're at their peak, which they haven't been at consistently in a while, but when they're at their peak, they're one of the most fun teams, most entertaining teams to watch.
Yeah, they give me hope.
Yeah, but I definitely wanted at least an overtime period because that game, that shot by Paul Pierce was just so ridiculous that it happened.
Like, he, like, ducked behind Korver and was, like, leaning and off of 1 foot, and he swished it. Like, sure. It was one of those weird moments where you expect it to go in because it's Pierce, but at the same time, it's just like that can't. Like, that is just impossible.
But the Hawks move on. The Warriors move on. They beat the Grizzlies. Convincing fashion, yeah. The Grizzlies put up a bit of a fight. You know, it didn't. They didn't allow it to become a total blowout after the first quarter.
They came back, and then that Curry shot just daggered them.
I mean,
as much as anybody has ever been daggered.
They lost. They were down 33 points in 3-point shooting category.
Yeah,
just 11 more made threes. Curry had twice as many made threes as the entire Grizzlies team. Like, that's just, you just can't do that if you're the Grizzlies. I mean, I guess you got to add a more dynamic offense. I don't know what wiggle room they have.
I mean, they need shooters, but we say that every year. They got Jordan Adams. Like, hopefully he plays a role next season and can contribute. Other than that, I mean, I don't know. Like, they probably need to play with a stretch four for more minutes than they currently do.
Yeah.
But it's not like you're just not going to use the advantage that you have with Gasol and Randolph anymore. I think you just kind of need to see them continue to evolve. I mean, they did get better offensively this year, and they did add some, like, they've been adding shooters year after year. Like, they brought in Courtney Lee, they brought in Vince Carter. They seem to at least acknowledge that they need to have 3-point shooting as a part of their attack. They just haven't made it as much of a weapon as it should be.
Right.
Because I think they need more balance. I think we saw that this series, and the Warriors kind of dared them to shoot, and they didn't make them pay. And they need to be able to make teams pay for that, even if they want to have a, if they want to go inside first, I think.
Right. Yeah, I agree with that. And the Warriors are just, I mean, in kind of the same way we talked about the Hawks wanting them in the next series, I just want the Warriors in all these series.
Yes, me too.
They're just so much fun.
Put them
to
in
watch.
The East too. Just make them play both.
Yeah, make them play. I don't know how you put three teams in a single game, but that may be a new hoop idea.
That's a definite hoop idea.
Yeah, yeah.
Whoever wins the game has to play against the Warriors. I don't know how.
Is it like a giant game? It's like a giant game of 21.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like one on one on one, except it's that, like, that would 15 be a, on 15 on 15.
Right, that would be a hard thing to play against NBA players, I feel like. Well, I guess any basketball game would be hard to play against NBA players.
No, but I mean, just watching NBA players do that would be rather different.
They're typically, yeah. I get, like, you would probably have to raise the rims, right? It'd have to be like a 12-foot rim.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. I mean, because you just have,
I would watch
it's just the most skilled.
Is this a new All-Star Weekend?
I think so. It's the most skilled basketball players in the world, and Tyler Hansbrough.
Oh, wow. Of all the players.
I really do. I just really do.
Take
like,
a cheap shot at Tyler Hansbrough.
Yeah, I really dislike watching him play. I've tried to talk myself into like the idea, and I can't stand watching him play.
Do you want to speculate on where he'll go in free agency in the summer? Do you want to dedicate a segment of this Conference Finals podcast to Tyler Hansbrough's future?
Seems like a poor idea for us.
Let's move on.
Yeah, let's move on. And then yesterday, Sunday, it was the game. The Houston Rockets become the, oh man, what was the stat? They become the ninth team out of 30 to come back from a 3-1 deficit, force a game 7, and then win game 7.
Just as you predicted, kind of.
I sort of did. I would like you to thank me for this.
Thank you.
Well, that was sincere.
That was not that sincere. That was weird. Like, I'm still trying to wrap my head around this. Like, it's been 24 hours. It hasn't quite been 24 hours since that ended, but it's just, what a collapse by the Clippers. And I mean, we need to obviously give Houston credit for, like, getting back to their identity and playing really well, but, like, my goodness.
Yeah.
When the series was 3-1, I don't think anybody, even the most optimistic Houston fan, could have, like, given a really rational prediction as to, like, how this could happen, you know?
No, it didn't seem, and it's not just the fact that they were down 3-1, they had been blown out in almost every quarter.
Yeah,
like that's the thing, is that they were dominated in those first four games, aside from the game they won, and even that was all muddled because there was like 98 free throws in the game or something ridiculous like that. Like, it was just such a weird game, and then like that's the one thing. And then someone said this was a backhanded compliment, and I didn't think it was at all. Like, I think this is just an accurate representation of this Houston season. They're a flawed team. Like, we think of them as this like offensive team. They're actually not anything special on offense. They just shoot a lot of threes. Mm-hmm. And then they made their defensive identity, but they did it throughout the season with Dwight Howard missing more than half the games. Like, they've had all these injuries. They have some real flaws in terms of how they attack you, but they're just the most resilient team.
They're so resilient. Yeah, and they're so resourceful.
Yeah, and that's where it's impressive with them is, like, they've had these injuries, and they still have injuries. They're missing two key players, and they have, like, these problems with the way that their game plans are and execute or whatever, but they're so resilient that even being down 3-1 in a series to a team that's kicking their ass, they can come back and win three straight games. And they kind of dominated those three. I mean, game six was weird. Like, the Clippers should have closed out in game six, and the weird fourth quarter ended up screwing them. But this was...
Weird is an understatement. Yeah. That was crazy.
But it was... I mean, in game seven and game five, the Rockets just flipped the script and just dominated them. They're incredibly resilient. And we can start... I guess we can start talking about it now, but it's... Something where I look towards this next series, and I think, like, well, the Warriors are so much better than them and match up really well, and their defense matches up to stop what Houston is good at offensively, and yet, I picked Warriors in five. Like, I expect this to be I think a competitive but a short series. But even then, like, if you told me I think the Rockets can make this a real long series. They've been so resilient. I don't think, like, I can't look at that and think it's ridiculous.
Yeah. It's funny, we keep calling them resilient, but then a couple of podcasts ago, we were talking about how they just, like, didn't show up in game one of the series.
It was a ruse!
Like, it was just, apparently.
It was a ruse! They were just waiting for the Clippers to relax, and then they pounced on them.
Yeah. I think the Clippers also got kind of tired. But also, like, I mean, the defense, like, Jason Terry was playing, like, amazing defense against Chris Paul. Like, some weird stuff happened in this series that you wouldn't have been able to predict. And, yeah, it's like, I was kind of toying with the idea of predicting a Warriors sweep because I think they're just so much better.
Yeah.
But I just can't do that against this Houston team. Like,
I even felt a little bad just picking five. Like, I kind of was thinking, like, I should do six, or maybe I should give them a lot of respect and do seven. Like, I don't think they'll win the series, but I don't know. Like, there's something about them that makes me question everything that I think I know about basketball.
Well, because you've watched Josh Smith and Corey Brewer, like, dominate a fourth quarter and hit threes and go crazy. I think with the Warriors, it's going to be an adjustment for them just playing against this team because they've been going up against this Memphis team that couldn't be more different stylistically.
Right.
So they're going up against this kind of old school slow the pace, like, pound the paint team, and now they're going to the Rockets, who are just going to run at every opportunity and just jack threes, like, from anyone. Even if they're a 32% shooter, they're jacking threes, and that's what they should do, probably, against this Warriors team, because I think that's the only way they can beat them, is by doing that and making them. So I think there's going to be a little bit of an adjustment there, and, like, they should keep doing, like, the Harden Howard pick and roll, and, like, even if the Warriors are, like, in better position than probably any other team to stop that, like, if you get Bogut in foul trouble, then, you know, the Rockets can take a game or two that way, I think.
Yeah, no, I agree. And, I mean, here's a weird stat from the final three games of last round. J.J. Redick on open threes, which, remember, not you, I know you know, but for the listener, open threes are classified as the defender is between 4 and 6 feet away from the shooter, and wide open threes are 6 feet or more of space.
Yeah.
J.J. Redick, the last three games of the second round, 2 of 12 on open threes, 3 of 12 on wide open threes. Trevor Ariza, last three games of the second round, 3 of 5 on open threes, 8 of 16 on wide open threes. And not that Trevor Ariza making open threes is a ridiculous thing, it's just like, you wouldn't think that Trevor Ariza would outshoot J.J. Redick.
No, never.
Ever.
But I think this is where you look at the Clippers and you look at just, like, Redick shouldn't have to work as hard as he worked in this series defensively. Like, he had to spend so much time guarding James Harden and chasing him around and guarding him one-on-one. And I think with the minutes low that he had, because they just have no bench and no depth, it just wore him out. And by the end of it, he'd probably missed so many open threes that he hesitated a little. And he made some weird decisions. He had some weird turnovers where he just passed the ball to nobody in that seventh game, which I think, like, physically tired, mentally tired, whatever. It's, I think he gave a hell of an effort all series. And
yeah,
I wouldn't want to sit here and say, like, J.J. Redick let his team down. No, I think, like, the team kind of let him down. Like, they asked him to do so much, and that's basically due to the way the roster was constructed. Like, maybe they could have played Matt Barnes a little bit more and had him spend some more time on Harden, but he wasn't making shots either. I don't really know what the Clippers could have done differently, other than, like, they should have been the team that picked up a Corey Brewer, picked up a Pablo Prigioni, and picked up a Josh Smith for nothing, because they desperately needed something. But instead, Houston got those guys, and the Clippers didn't really do much to their team other than add Austin Rivers to it, who probably won them a game or two in the playoffs.
Yeah, that's the funny thing. It's like, Austin Rivers actually ended up being a good acquisition for them.
Yeah, like, they needed more.
Yeah, but exactly. They need much more.
And they're going to have to figure out, I mean, that's the big question now, is, like, even if there's no drama with DeAndre and they keep him, it's just like, how do you take the next step with this team when you have such little wiggle room? Like, they're going to have to do creative little things like Houston did, right?
Yeah, you have to find just those guys who are willing to just go chase a title. But
yeah,
can you convince? I mean, maybe we should talk about the Clippers here. I've always thought the Chris Paul scrutiny and the Clippers scrutiny was ridiculous, because I look at those series that they've lost, and yeah, they haven't made it to the conference finals, but I thought, like, well, which series were they definitely supposed to win? I've always felt like they kind of played to where they were.
Me too.
But this time, you go up 3-1 in a series in the second round after knocking off the Spurs in the first round, you have to close that out. Like,
you
this
do.
This is the time where I really feel like, all right, now you can scrutinize Chris Paul and Blake Griffin or whatever for not coming through.
But do you blame Paul, though? Like,
no, that's the thing, is I think he played really well. Like, I saw all this, and I saw all this last night. It was like, you know, it's okay to scrutinize Chris Paul and realize it's not just his fault. I'm just like, I looked at those games, and aside from the fourth quarter in Game 6, like, he should have played better then. But
everybody should have played better.
Yeah, everyone should. Like, I just look at it, I'm like, he played pretty well. Like, he played, like, you can, and even, like, Blake played really well. Like, the role players just didn't step up. DeAndre Jordan wasn't as effective. And it doesn't mean, like, Chris Paul doesn't deserve any criticism. I just don't think he deserves much.
Yeah. I thought he was doing a lot at the beginning of the game yesterday to just keep the team in it at all.
Yeah, absolutely.
And honestly, I just think it's been the same story that it's been with the Clippers all season. It's been, well, what happens when they put their 6th, 7th, and 8th best players in the game? And that just seemed to be the story. Is their starters got fatigued physically, mentally, whatever. And this is, again, this is after that 7-game series against the Spurs that I think took a lot out of them.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I mean,
also, I mean, Doc was saying last night, I don't remember who got the interview, there was a few different pieces about Doc saying that he thought they got a little bit arrogant after the Spurs series. Like, they didn't come out with the same fire against Houston, which is unacceptable in the playoffs, but is also kind of just understandable with human nature. I mean, those are the champs, and that series was amazing.
Right.
But I do think that probably played a part in it a little bit, but I think more so it was just, They needed to close that out after it was 3-1, and at that point the Rockets had this, they were fresher and they had more options and they made some adjustments, and the Clippers, just due to the roster composition, it's like, what moves did they have to make?
Yeah, and the Rockets just outplayed them in the last three games, and yeah. I think that, I mean, Doc,
it's so much harder.
Yeah, Doc would obviously know better than I would, because he's the coach and the president of the team, and I'm very much not, but I don't know that I agree with the whole, like, they didn't have the same fire right after that series, because they did come out and dominate the first four games. I mean, they were up 3-1.
I mean, they had it in game one.
Yeah, sure. Like, I think they probably relaxed, and I think they probably like lost their focus or fire or whatever, thinking like, oh, we're up 3-1, we're gonna close this out.
I think that's what definitely happened in game five.
Yeah, like, okay, if we lose game five, then
we still have the end of game six.
Yeah, then we still have the game six, and at the end of game six, it was like, hey, you guys, we're in the next round. Like, you know, and then that blows up, and then it's a game seven in Houston, and at that point, they may have just not been able to refocus, which is a bad thing. Like, don't get me wrong. It's,
yeah.
Like, that's, you know, maybe even worse. I mean, I guess I don't really know what I meant. I still don't know what I mean by this, but I'm sticking by it because that's just what I do. But okay. I think that calling them chokers is incorrect, but saying they collapsed is the way to phrase it. And I'm not even really sure what the difference is between choking and collapsing.
I think choking kind of...
Choking is being, like, scared, right?
That you're scared, that you can't handle the moment,
yeah.
That you're, like, mentally weak or whatever, which is not necessarily what you're saying. You're just saying it was a meltdown, which, when you're up 3-1 and when you have Game 6 in the bag like they did, like, yeah, they melted down on multiple occasions, and in the grand scheme of this series and these playoffs, they kind of melted down, too, and I think there are numerous reasons for that, and part of it was also the Rockets played really well, and they got back to what got them there rather than doing whatever it was that they were doing earlier in the series where they just didn't, like, we couldn't figure them out. And I think we still have trouble figuring them out because it's like, well, why can't they just do that all the time?
Yeah, that seems to be the thing of, like, oh, you guys have this level. We've seen this level. Why does it go away?
Yeah.
But we'll go back to the teams that actually made it, that actually won. instead of the Clippers. The Rockets, I don't know if that's the correct way of saying it. I was going to say, if they play like they do, like they did in the regular season, I like them to put up a fight, but the way they played in the regular season, they got smoked by the Warriors.
Yeah, Dwight missed two of those games.
Yeah, Dwight missed two of those games, and I don't put anything into the results of the regular season matchup, but the way they matched up and the way they played is something I think you can take a little bit from. Mm-hmm. But I guess if the Rockets can go into this series playing like they did in the last three games, which was kind of this, well, we're about to be eliminated, we have to give everything.
Yeah.
If you can have that mentality from game one in Oakland, you know, maybe they can make some noise. And
I think they should have that mentality.
Them. Yeah, like that should be something where you would think Kevin McHale can trick them into, like, keeping that going. Like, look at the urgency we've played with the last three games, and look at the urgency we didn't play with in the first four games of that series. You know, which one would you rather do?
Yeah. Plus, look at how people are discussing the series. Nobody expects them to win this series.
Oh, they can do that. They can do that thing that the Clippers did, where they pass out all the people making predictions.
Absolutely.
Oh, we're about to be posted in the Rockets locker room.
We could be. That could be great.
Oh, man. I guess that would be great.
Warriors in five. I want to motivate them. I want them to take this to seven.
Yeah, I want a seven-game series out of this. That'd be great.
Awesome. Doesn't mean I think it's going to happen, but I'd love if that somehow influenced them. But, yeah, I think they need some lucky things to go their way. I don't think they have a Tony Allen on their team to really disrupt the Warriors' guards. So I think it's going to be really difficult. I mean, they're a good defensive team. They're a really good defensive team. But I think it's going to be difficult to slow the Warriors down when they're really, really hot. But if Golden State has an off night and the Rockets figure out a way to score consistently against them, which is a very difficult task, you know, this could be close and competitive. I have this feeling that we're going to see a game that's like close and competitive for like three quarters. And then the Warriors are like, okay, we're better than you, which is how we saw a lot of their regular season games play out.
Right. And I think I kind of look at it as like, they just went against the Mavericks and the Clippers. Mavericks are not a good defensive team at all. And the Clippers are someone we've kind of thought like, well, you know, they're not bad defensively, but they're not good. This is kind of like smoke and mirrors, right? Like, I don't think...
Yeah, I think they have some good defenders, and they play hard defensively.
Yeah, and now you're going against the best.
The best, yeah.
And that's going to be the tricky part. The Warriors gave up the lowest field goal percentage this year. They gave up the fifth lowest three-point percentage. I mean, and that's the key. Like, they dare Dwight Howard to beat them. inside and they take away the three-point line. I mean, I guess James Harden can fix that by getting Klay Thompson into foul trouble. Maybe you can get switches
but
to
have
Curry.
But here's my thing. Is like, okay, so he gets Thompson in foul trouble. But this team – and I mean, look, like – oftentimes you just see great offense beating great defense, and Harden's a player that's capable of just doing that regardless. But I think this team has a lot of guys that they can put on to Harden. Like they can put Livingston on him, they can put Barnes on him, and they have Iguodala, who I think defends Harden as well as anybody in the league. And I think like if it's me...
You can put Draymond on him.
Yeah, you can totally put Draymond on him. And if it's me, like if I'm Steve Kerr, I know he has had Iguodala play as a bench player, and I wouldn't necessarily screw with the starting lineup, but I would essentially play him as a starter. Like, I would give him big minutes, and I'd have him defending Harden as much as possible because he's just really, really good at that.
Yeah, I think I would... I agree. Like, I would still keep the same starting lineup, but I think I would go something like, you know, I think Iguodala would be my first sub in for, like, Klay.
Yeah.
And you bring out Klay with, I don't know.
And you bring Klay back in.
Yeah, and then you bring or somewhere around there. And then he can kind of, he's not like a second unit guy because he's starting, but he essentially like carries your second unit.
Yeah.
And he's that bridge between like Curry and Klay. And then when Curry comes back in, you put him, you put Klay next to like Sean Livingston. And that could really, you know, be a dynamic thing. And then you have Iguodala, you know, playing 30 minutes. I guess the thing is, like, will Iguodala hurt your offense
too much? Not if he shoots like he did the last few games.
Yeah, I'm not sure that you can count on that.
We'll see. Like, you can't necessarily count on it, but I wouldn't say it's impossible. Like,
yeah.
I don't think he's a bad offensive player anyway. Like, I mean, he's an inconsistent shooter, but he can do other things offensively. And I never felt like he's really a liability out there.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if he's only taking open jumpers and then he's trying to create for him or somebody else after that, then that can work.
Yeah, I could see it working. But, I mean, maybe that's not even necessary. Like, Barnes has been really good, so maybe you don't need to do that. But that's just kind of when I was, like, sort of sizing up the series in my head, I thought this might be, like, Iguodala time.
Yeah.
But we'll see. I think they have so many options there anyway. Like, Justin Holiday could get some minutes and guard him if they wanted
to. Yeah, they do. I mean, they have a lot of guys that they can throw out there.
So many 6'6", 6'7", 6'8", dudes.
You can put Livingston on for a little bit.
Totally.
I mean, it's not ideal, but, you know, he's a solid defender. Like, he could make something work. Now, here are a couple of stats for you, James. Rockets were the best team at defending the three this year. Give up the lowest percentage of lowest three-point percentage. In the two losses the Warriors have in these playoffs, shooting 23% from three.
Yeah.
In the eight wins, 41%. So all you have to do if you're the Rockets is stop their three-point shooting.
Yeah, which is so easy.
That's all you got to do. I'm bummed that we don't have Patrick Beverley in this series.
Me too.
He would have been so fun watching Steph work against him.
All reports are that he won't come back. You know, he must really want to. I wouldn't be shocked if there are a couple of games into the series and they're like, oh, by the way, Patrick Beverley's back. Like,
yeah, what did he do?
Tore
his wrist or something?
It was something like that.
Yeah, I think he had torn ligaments in his wrist or something like that. If it's not a shooting wrist, just throw a little brace on there.
It's so simple.
They don't need you to shoot the ball anyway. Just go out there and be Curry's shadow.
Dr. Zach Harper.
I don't think you would. Yeah. There's my medical advice. Well, I guess you wouldn't want to be a shadow because you'd be behind him.
That's true.
Well, I guess it depends on where the sun is. Well, the sun's not up because you're playing at night.
Because you're inside the arena.
But there are lights.
That's true.
So I guess you want to be, as long as there's a light behind him. Yeah, because you wouldn't want to shine the light in his eyes. Well, I guess you want to be his cloak.
His cloak?
Yeah, because you want to cover him. You don't want to be a shadow.
Okay.
Yeah, You want to be Mr. 94-foot cloak.
I like that.
Yeah. I'm glad I figured that out and showed everyone my work on that.
I think that would change the series if he was healthy. Because the way it is right now, I credit Jason Terry for the defense that he played in that Clipper series, especially the end. No, like, seriously. I didn't think he had that in him. And he made some big shots. And Prigioni really had an impact in that Game 7. But I just think when you're asking those guys to keep up with Curry, like, that's...
If you're the Rockets, like, do you kind of just throw Jason Terry onto Harrison Barnes and put Ariza on Curry and just say, hey, maybe you guys want to go give Harrison Barnes a 40-point night? Go ahead.
I thought they might try to put Ariza on Thompson and have, like, Harden on Barnes. And
yeah, I mean, that's probably, yeah. I mean, you can switch it up. You can have quite a few looks. I would assume at some point Harden's just going to be the point guard, and you throw in Corey Brewer to hawk somebody.
Yeah. But I'm not, like, as... Like, Corey Brewer can, like, annoy offensive players for sure, but I'm just not sure that he's going to be the guy that's going to really take Thompson out of his game or anything. Yeah. Like, especially after what... Like, I think going against the Grizzlies in some ways is bad because they're a very different style offensively to Houston. But I think in dealing with how the Grizzlies played defense, that was about as good preparation as you can get.
Here's a stat for you. Another one. With Patrick Beverley on the bench, Steph Curry shot 60% from the field and 61% from three. And with Beverley on the court, it dropped dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
Curry only shot 55% from the field and 42% from three.
That's still pretty good.
Yeah, it's still not bad.
That is,
but
still
there was
quite
an improvement,
good.
So you can expect Curry to shoot 60% from three in the series.
Definitely. Oh, well, so a sweep then.
Yeah. Definitely a sweep then. All right, let's jump over to the East.
Okay.
We got the Atlanta Hawks and the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Will this series redeem the Eastern Conference playoffs, Zach?
That's asking a lot.
It's been rough so far.
Asking a lot out of them. I guess this is the question. Does the superstar matter more than the team concept?
Yeah, that's the big question. That's the big narrative, right?
This has been the argument I've had since the 2013 Nuggets.
Mm-hmm.
Where people are like, oh, but they're a team. They can do team things. Look at them team it up. Like, and I'm just like, yeah, they don't have a star, and the stars usually win out. Now, this is a...
I'm not sure that's the case here, though.
This is a better team, I think, and with a better attack and more versus... Like, that team wasn't really a good three-point shooting team, and this team is, and this team's a better defensive team, and I think that they can, you know, really create more problems. But I still look at it, and I'm like... If these games are close, like I'll take LeBron against whatever the Hawks are trying to do as a team.
But what if they're not close, though? What if?
But why wouldn't they be? Like, are they? I mean, if we were talking about the Hawks at their peak, yeah, I think that they could really take advantage of the Cavs team. We haven't seen that team in quite a while.
We haven't. But I can't shake the feeling that they still exist there somewhere, even without Cephalosha. And it might be totally misguided because they've just kept disappointing me. They kept winning series, but they've kept disappointing me. But I just, the way that team is capable of playing, the way that they move the ball, Cleveland's defense has definitely gotten better throughout the season, but I don't think it is ready for this Hawks team, especially.
I thought you were going to say ready for this jelly. I honestly did.
They're not ready for this jelly.
They're not ready for this deli. Delavadova.
Oh, Delhi isn't ready for the jelly.
Yeah.
But no, it's just like what the Cavs have played, like this Bulls offense and this Celtics offense. Like what they're about to deal with is just something completely different.
Right.
And I'm not sure how this team is going to match up with them. I mean, you're going to have like where are you putting Shumpert's like their quote unquote stopper, right?
Right.
Like, are you putting him on Korver? Are you putting him on Teague?
No, I put him on Korver. I'd let Kyrie go. I know Kyrie's not a good defender, but
Kyrie healthy against Teague is a worry, but not necessarily a catastrophe. Kyrie, if he's still hobbled.
Yeah, Kyrie's going to have to wear Teague out.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing is Teague may have great starts to games, but you have to wear him out.
And I just think so much hinges on how healthy Irving is and how much he can contribute. And we don't know yet. I think he said today, like, he feels amazing or something. Yeah. But, like, I don't know that, like, I want to see it, you know?
You want to see his medical records?
I want to see...
You
want to talk to his doctor.
You want to go against my expert medical opinion?
Well, you haven't given your expert medical opinion on Kyrie yet.
I think his back. Oh wait, no. What's wrong with him? His knee.
His knee and his foot.
Yeah, I think his knee is fine. Okay.
What about that sprained foot?
Yeah, it's probably fine too.
Sure. So this is why you're picking the Cavs?
I honestly don't even know why I picked the Cavs.
Okay.
And I feel like, didn't Matt go back and he went to the Hawks? Am I the only person picking the Cavs in this series from us?
I think Anon is picking the Cavs.
Okay. So Anon and I are riding strong on this one.
I was surprised that Ken Berger and I both had the Hawks winning, but then Matt did his flip-flopping.
Yeah, well, Anon said he's 85% confident in this.
That's a lot of percents.
I would say I'm 8
That's to... many percents.
I would say I'm 8 to 5% confident in this.
Again, somebody said not to trust the Hawks, so I'm not that confident, but I will ride with them for now. I just think this Cleveland team isn't quite as good as people think. Like, I just haven't been that impressed with the way they've been playing, and like, if I don't think it's really about LeBron is my thing, and I'm going to write something on this, but like, we're talking about it's LeBron versus this awesome team, and like, in a way it is, but also like, the reason they beat Chicago wasn't because of LeBron. It was because like, Tristan Thompson and Mozgov were great, and Shumpert was pretty good and had his moments too, and J.R. Smith hit a bunch of big shots, and Dellavedova had that big last game. Like, it was these role players.
Yeah.
And if they all come up really big again, then sure. But I'm not sure that's all going to happen at the same time against this Hawks team.
Yeah, I mean, the tricky thing is that the Cavs, they've been better defensively, but they haven't been consistent, and that's what you really need, that consistency out of them. I will say this. They were the fifth best team at making three-pointers this year, and they were the ninth best team at defending the three. Mm-hmm. So they're solid at defending the three. And I mean, so are the Hawks. The Hawks were obviously, they were second best team at making threes. They were seventh best at defending, and that could be the real key here, because we saw the Hawks. I mean, they struggled when they weren't making their outside shots.
Yeah,
they corrected that towards the end of the Wizards series by one making outside shots, but they did that. But they did that by like, they would go inside early, right?
Yeah.
And they kind of start tricking the Wizards just to pack the paint against them, and then they would have more open shots. And they were getting a lot of open shots throughout the series, but they just got into a better rhythm because of it. You know, they can probably exploit. I mean, the Wizards are obviously a much better defense than what the Cavs are. But this Cavs team can take away threes, and Shumpert, you know, cloaking Korver is a way to do that. I think
he's already got his cloak on.
I think the key to me is, what does Damari Carroll do in this series? Because he's been phenomenal in the playoffs. He and Al Horford have been the best players on the Hawks.
Yeah,
but
now he's going to have to guard LeBron.
Now you got to guard LeBron, and how does that affect his shot? I think he's shooting a ridiculous percentage in the playoffs so far, but once you have to start guarding LeBron, what does that mean?
My question then is, like, okay, so the other side, like, is LeBron, like, this is really when they're going to miss Kevin Love, right? Like, they're not, I think we've seen they're not going to really be able to get away with James Jones and Mike Miller playing
right
extended time. But then the way the Hawks spread you out, like, is Tristan Thompson going to be okay? Like, can they afford to stay big with Thompson and Mozgov, or are they going to have to shift LeBron to the four a lot? Like, I don't know how these matchups are really going to work, and it just seems like Cleveland, like, not only are they missing Love, but they're missing, like, one other kind of, like Sean Marion would be perfect if he was, like, younger. Like,
right.
Like, it seems like they're missing one other guy that can kind of guard threes and fours and be versatile and close out to the Hawks shooters and rebound and stuff. And I'm just, maybe Marion is the guy that they use more in this series. I don't know. But it just seems like, to me, like, depth is a real issue there in terms of having versatile players. Depth is an issue for Atlanta too, but it's kind of a different one. I'm interested to see how the matchups work and how the rotations work, because I don't think, you know, I just, I don't think they have the ability to do defensively what Washington was able to do.
Right. No, I agree with that. I also think, like, I don't know. I still think this Cavs offense can be potent. And maybe that puts enough pressure on it. And it is just kind of like you get to the end of games, and if Kyrie's healthy and you've got LeBron, you know, I like those two chances against the Hawks. Yeah, but the Hawks are a good defense. What I'm saying is this is a tough series to call.
And what we're saying is this we don't have hot takes for you.
Yeah, this is probably the reason both teams made it to the conference finals, because they're quite good. They're
both very good.
Because they're both very good teams, and they're both capable of winning the series.
My thing is, like, forget who's going to win. We've been talking about this since, like, the Cavs turned it around and the Hawks were still the number one seed. Like, mm-hmm. This is what we knew. If things went right, this would be the conference finals, and we wanted them to see, like, to play at a really high level, and this would be, like, you know, you kind of assume would go seven, whatever. But since then, a lot of stuff has gone wrong for both teams, and, like, Kevin Love's got hurt, and Thabo Sefolosha, I realize Thabo Sefolosha is not Kevin Love, but since the Hawks are constructed a certain way, that has had a big impact, and Horford and Millsap have been banged up a little bit, and Kyrie's been hobbling, and it's just we haven't seen these teams playing at that high level in a while. So yeah. I'm just kind of hoping they get, like, maybe they're probably not going to get all the way back there, but I just hope they get back there kind of stylistically to the point where we see a pretty series, like an aesthetically pleasing series, a competitive series, because we haven't really had a lot of that in the East, and I want to see this be really good, and I think there's a chance for it to be that. It's just we don't quite know.
Yeah, I would love a 7-game series in this one. I think it's a fascinating juxtaposition of two styles and two team concepts that are both justifiable.
Yeah.
And both can work, and I think this is going to be a really fun series. Here's a little stat for you. I'm just finding all kinds of stats today. Mm-hmm. It turns out if you do some research, you can find stats.
That's a fact.
They're interesting, which is new to me. LeBron James against the Hawks with Damari Carroll on the bench,
mm-hmm.
64% from the field, 66% from three, although it's just 4 of 6, so not like he's launching. With Damari Carroll on the court, drops to 41% from the field, and 20%, just 1 of 5, from three-point range. So Damari Carroll's done a pretty good job on him.
Yeah. He's a pesky guy. I mean, he's giving up some inches and some size there.
He's strong, though.
But he is, yeah, he's like wiry strong, kind of. I mean, he's not a small guy, but if you know what I mean, like, he's stronger than you would think. Just
he's got that steel worker strength that the kids talk about.
That is all the kids are.
It's
talking
all
about.
They talk about.
No, I think this is a good stylistic contrast here, and it's like, yeah, people talk about, like, well, LeBron's been to the finals however many years in a row, and he's not going to get stopped by this Hawks team that doesn't have championship experience and whatever. Yeah, and I'm just thinking, like, well, like. The team that beat them, that beat LeBron last year, played a lot like this Hawks team.
Yeah, that's
people
true.
People have compared those two every once in a while, or endlessly all the time. But
hey, did you know Mike Budenholzer was an assistant coach under Greg Popovich?
Oh my goodness!
Yeah, no, a little known fact.
That's news to me.
Yeah, it was just a quick 19 years.
just flew right by.
Yeah, just flew right by.
So yeah, I think this is the sort of team that can test Cleveland's defense, and I think they're really good defensively themselves. So that's kind of why I picked the Hawks. But again, like you, I'm just like, I don't know, I had to pick somebody. Like, I'm not super confident in it.
Yeah, I feel pretty confident in the Warriors pick. I don't feel confident at all in this Cavs
yeah,
and six
too.
Pick.
I've been confident in picking the Warriors all along.
Yeah,
yeah. You know, they're so much better than everybody else.
If you're Mike Budenholzer, you let Peruantic shoot his first three, and if he misses it, you pull him from the game immediately for Mike Muscala, right?
I think Muscala is ahead of him in the rotation for me.
He's like, got to be. He's just so much better.
Yeah, he's been playing so much better. He's been, like, unafraid in the fourth quarter and, like, making plays. I think Antic, It's getting to the point where
he's not any good.
Isn't real anymore because the right. teams are
because he shoots 30% from three.
Yeah, but before, like in the regular season, I think a lot of the time teams treated him like a 3-point shooter anyway. Like they still would try to close out hard on him, but that doesn't like people are just letting him shoot now.
Yeah,
and I think that's obviously going to continue. I think it'd be interesting to see if Mike Scott can do anything in this series because he's been kind of the odd man out there, and they would really help them if they got somebody else to contribute off the bench.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm not sure he's any
this
good.
This is Deep Hawks analysis while we're getting to Mike Scott talk.
Yeah. I actually think that I don't mind Tristan Thompson on Paul Millsap for the fact that I know Paul Millsap can hit threes, and he was like 35% in the regular season. He's 35% in the postseason. That's good. That's league average. I'd be comfortable with Paul Millsap shooting a bunch of lightly contested threes.
Maybe that's what they do.
Yeah.
They just think we're
like
gonna...
I'm not. I don't think it's you let Paul Millsap beat you kind of thing. Like, no, you got to defend him. But I think for the trade off of what Thompson can do on the offensive boards and finishing around the basket and all that stuff, I think that could be a decent trade off.
Yeah, I mean that's gonna be. Thompson was like absurdly good last round, and Mozgov too. I mean, I know Mozgov had like one really bad game.
Yeah, I think game six he was really bad, but that's it.
But I thought generally, like their defense was like a lot of the reason why it was good was him.
Yeah.
And
well, if you're the Hawks, you got to go to Horford early, right, and try to get Mozgov into trouble.
Yeah, absolutely. Because then, like, I don't like. I'm trying to figure out like is the Cavs closing lineup like? Are you're putting only one of Mozgov and Thompson out there, and you probably have JR in the game, right? And like LeBron in the four, but I don't know. Maybe not.
Yeah.
Like maybe.
No, I think you do. I think they probably go Thompson, LeBron, JR, Iman, and Kyrie.
Yeah, me too.
Or maybe you can sub out LeBron for Dellavedova. I don't know. I don't know what you do there.
I mean, Dellavedova.
I mean, he's clearly the better player, right? Yeah, he won them that series.
I think he's the more clutch.
He's definitely more clutch. He's
like,
a better.
It's really weird they didn't go to Dellavedova.
He's a better wrestler. We know that. He's a better wrestler.
Funnier?
He's definitely funnier. He's more Australian than LeBron is.
Yeah. Like
it's close. More. It's close. Well, I would say it's close.
Well, I think it's close in terms of Australianness with him and Kyrie Irving.
Sure,
but with
yeah.
LeBron, it's not. It's a landslide.
Is LeBron more Canadian than Dellavedova?
I don't know.
Is that something that would...
I mean
that's probably
like,
something that wouldn't even matter, right?
Well,
because neither
Canada
of them are Canadian.
And Australia are both in the Commonwealth.
Right,
but America's a lot closer
and
than
he's
Australia.
Good friends with Tristan Thompson.
Yeah.
Tristan Thompson's part
great
of La Familia.
Tristan Thompson, yeah.
Yeah. So that probably decides it, which team can be more... Well,
LeBron,
I guess we're talking about competing players from the same team, so the Cavs are definitely more Canadian.
Yeah.
Than the
like
Hawks,
LeBron,
so I'm surprised you're going
I'm
with the
sure
Hawks.
I'm not sure that Dellavedova has Drake's number, but I'm sure LeBron does.
Right, yeah.
I don't know.
Well, this has come to a screeching halt.
Not enough Canadians in this conference finals for us to really deal. Like, if only they hadn't made that damn Kevin Love trade.
We can't do a proper breakdown of
the
this.
The Cavs were like Team Canada at Summer League. They had like Josh Powell and Bennett and Wiggins. And
then they got good.
It's all gone to hell.
Yeah, then they got good.
It's really sad.
It is. All right, James, I think that's a decent enough playoff preview for us.
For the, decent enough for us.
For the conference finals.
what about for like for a different podcast duo? Would it be decent enough if it was you and Matt? Like,
yeah, I mean, it would have been a lot more of us not paying attention to one another.
That's nice.
Yeah. No, I think this has been a good one.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I think we did fine. I think we'd advance to the conference finals in this podcast.
Awesome.
Whatever that means.
It means everything to me.
Yeah. Well, you can check out our previews on CBSSports.com. You can follow you on Twitter at OutsideTheNBA. I am at TalkHoops. You can subscribe to the Ion Basketball podcast on iTunes and leave a 5 or 4-star review. And I don't know. That seems like housekeeping enough. Thanks, James.
Thank you, Zach.